It seems that not a day goes by without another corruption saga to be covered. Today, we speak to Toby Chance, the Democratic Alliance spokesperson on trade, industry and competition. Toby.
Good morning. Good morning, Chris.
Please give us a background to the corruption exposed by whistleblowers at the National Lotteries Commission.
It goes back many years. There were suspicions that corrupt activities were taking place, mainly in the awarding of grants to individuals and NGOs that were not, legitimate organizations. And what happened was that employees in various offices of the National Lottery started to send information to the executive that, you know, things were not right. And this led to a whole cascading of litigation between the whistleblowers and the organization. And millions of rands were spent. And until the board was replaced, nothing really was done, although an investigation was implemented by the president. The whistleblowers have been really severely damaged by this. And in many instances, their lives have been ruined, and their finances have been completely devastated. So corruption is rife, and there are allegations that anything up to 2 billion rand of corrupt grants were issued between around about 2011 and 2022. So enormous sums of money.
Who are they pointing the fingers at?
They're pointing fingers at the board. Members of the board, not all members of the board. I'm talking about the previous board, which was chaired by Alfred Navatunda. Also, senior executives, the CEO, other board members, and they're pointing fingers at them because they essentially set up the systems almost perfectly to enable corruption. So, for example, a couple of weeks ago, when the NLC was interrogated by the Auditor General at the SCOPA meeting, it became clear that, for example, they weren't recording ID numbers of grant recipients, which meant that people could essentially double or triple or quadruple dip between different organizations, and there was no way of tracking which of those people were double dipping. So essentially, they used all the means that they could to crook the books. They also had a thing called proactive funding, which meant instead of putting out a call for proposals, they picked organizations that they thought would be compliant and just gave them money. And in most cases, that resulted in huge kickbacks as part of the deal. You know, I'll give you some money if you give me some of it back. That's really the modus operandi.
President Ramaphosa did sign a proclamation to empower the Special Investigation Unit to probe these allegations. How far is that investigation?
It's making progress, although slow progress. It was proclaimed in 2020, can you believe it, that long ago. And what has happened is that the former chair, Navatunda, has asked for a judicial review of that proclamation on the grounds that he claims the National Lottery is not a state institution because it doesn't receive state funding. In terms of the Special Investigations Unit, they can only investigate, state institutions. So what has happened is the President Ramaphosa has sent in a replying affidavit denying those allegations, and so the court is now busy with it. So what has happened is that something in the region of 500 million rands of assets have been seized by the Asset Forfeiture Unit. But they haven't been disposed of yet. They've been set aside, and that includes the former chair Navatunda's 27 million rand house, which apparently was paid for by some of these dodgy grants. Now, one of the other things that the SIU is investigating are a whole series of accounting firms that were brought in by these lotto applicants to cook the books. And you've got a situation where many of these accounting firms are set up purely in order to apply for these grants, and again receiving kickbacks. So that's part of what the SIU is investigating. And as a result of the tightening up of systems, the Auditor General revealed that the National Lotteries Commission has actually underspent in the previous financial year by almost 1 billion rand, because of the systems that they're putting in place to stop this corruption, which is a good thing, but it's obviously a short-term pain for a long-term gain.
Now, I understand that the Lotteries Commission has committed to paying reparations to those whistleblowers affected. What's the status of that, Toby?
Yes, the Lotteries Commission has announced that they've set aside 20 million rand to pay out reparations to some of the whistleblowers. We don't know who they are because they've all signed confidentiality agreements, which is understandable. And some of that money will also be paid to some of the beneficiaries that were denied the money that they should have got because of the corrupt activities. It's now sitting with the Auditor General. So in terms of the agreement, after the National Lotteries Commission made the recommendations, the Auditor General now has to approve them. So it's sitting with them. And I was in contact with the Commissioner recently about this, and she has no control over that. But it's a step in the right direction. We don't know whether that 20 million rand is going to be the end of it. It depends if other allegations come up or other claims come through. But because of the confidentiality, there's not a lot of information that we are able to dig into the detail for.
Just turning to the new license operator. Now, they say they need 12 months to get their systems going. What happens in the meantime? Are tickets sold?
Well, yes, there's been a whole last few weeks, actually, have been very uncertain because the Lotto license was, in fact, it did expire on the 31st of May, the Tuva Holdings license. And as a result of the delay in appointing the new Lotto operator, which was only announced on the 28th of May, Sizikeza Holdings, the court was brought in, and the court actually said that the temporary license that Minister Tau wanted to introduce couldn't run for 12 months, it could only run for 5 months. And that led to the Lotteries Commission taking the court on review and requesting that it be extended to 12 months. What had happened was that Minister Tau wanted to appoint Ituba Lottery, which was a sister company of Ituba Holdings, as the temporary license holder, but that was declared unlawful. So what has happened is that the minister has now reappointed Ituba Holdings on an emergency basis, using the powers that he has under the Lotteries Act to continue with the lottery for 12 months. Now, I'm sure that there's going to be further litigation. And the grounds that Ituba Holdings lodged with the court that said that they can't carry on for just 5 months, they had to carry on for 12 months, was that they would lose 50 million rand if they were only to run it for 5 months. So the question is, why is it necessary for them to make a profit? Can they not just cover their costs? So I think that in a way, what happened is that Ituba Holdings has strong-armed the Lotteries Commission and Minister Tau, and essentially give them an ultimatum. And Minister Tau has essentially taken a decision which he says is in the public interest to keep ticket sales going. And I think there is a certain logic to that, because if the ticket sales hadn't carried on, then the hugely competitive, I suppose you could call it gambling, and particularly online gambling industry in this country would have probably resulted in the Lotto losing significant market share. And that would result in less income for the Lotteries Distribution Fund, which would have meant, in turn, NGOs losing out. So it is a complex process, and I can't think that it's actually ended yet. It would be very surprising to me if there wasn't further litigation coming up around the corner.
Exactly. What happens if other bidders for the license contest the minister's decision?
Well, you see, that's the thing. It may be that there is an interdict requested on the Ituba Holdings extension, because essentially it's now their third extension. I mean, they had the third license, they had the fourth license, they had it extended by Minister Patel for 2 years, and now they've had it effectively extended by another year. So they really had four bites of the cherry, which I think many of the contesting bidders will find to be unconstitutional and unlawful. So it's you know, anybody's guess what the court's going to say about that.
Toby, while I have you here, may I please ask you about the DA submission on the Transformation Fund? Please share the highlights with us.
Yes, thanks, Chris. So the Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition put out a concept document in March requesting submissions on what they call the Transformation Fund. And the deadline was last Thursday, the 28th of May, and we submitted our comments and our proposals. Just to sort of recap, the Transformation Fund intends to raise 100 billion rand in the next 5 years, 20 billion a year, to support Black-owned businesses. And there were many, many questions which arose when that concept document came out. And certainly looking at the submissions that have been made by the likes of Business Unity South Africa, the Center for Development Enterprise, and others, many of those questions have not been answered. So in the DA submission, our principal objections were, number one, the whole concept of BEE has really been discredited, and the intention of this fund is to double down on BEE legislation by focusing on a set of factors which are included in the scorecard, which have resulted more like in concentration of assets and wealth into a small group of wealthy Black people at the expense of the majority of Black people in this country. In fact, the majority of people, full stop. And so we have a situation where we have a lot of very rich people that have been given shares in companies in terms of the BEE legislation, the ownership element of the scorecard, and not a lot of focus on starting and growing new businesses, which is the only way in which this country can grow. So the other problem is that there are already multitudes of funds. I mean, you've got the National Empowerment Fund, you've got the Small Enterprise Finance Development Agency, you've got the Technology Innovation Fund, you've got many, many different funds, all of which are trying to do the same thing. And on the whole, their record has been dismal. In other words, the businesses that have either folded or they haven't paid back their loans. So we asked the question, why is this fund going to be any different? There's nothing in it that suggests it'll be any different. Although the department is claiming that it's going to be a partnership with the private sector, we're not really sure how that's going to work. So the minister is apparently appointing an 8-member board and an advisory panel. Why you need both is another matter. We don't know who those board members are going to be, what their term of office will be, and so on. So what the DA is proposing instead is that instead of sort of tinkering at the edges, we need to get this economy going. What we say is that no transformation without growth. No growth, no transformation. And by transformation, we all understand the need to broaden participation of Black people in this economy, both as employees and as business owners. One of the things we pointed out in our submission was that in South Africa, only about 10% of employees are either self-employed or own businesses. And that compares with about 30% in other economies of comparable size and stages of development. So if you were to close that gap by focusing on developing and supporting businesses, then unemployment figures would drastically reduce. And to do that, we need to do the basics. We need to reduce crime. We need to improve infrastructure. We need to reduce red tape. We need to improve our educational outcomes, which are shocking. We need to put more money into developing entrepreneurship mindsets in our TVET colleges and universities. We've got to shift the gear totally around what an economy does to create jobs. And that was really the thrust of the DA's position.
Well, the Democratic Alliance has been accused of being anti-transformation. What do you say to that, Toby?
Well, it's a self-serving argument by those who make that accusation, because it tries to paint us as a relic of apartheid, which, of course, we've never been. We've always been a party with a liberal, democratic focus and set of values. And what that means is that we don't believe in discrimination of any sort. We just don't think that race-based redress is the right approach, because what has that resulted in is that you have, you know, multiple bites at the same cherry by the same people, and that's not empowering previously disadvantaged people at all. You know, the Constitution makes the point about the need for redress and reducing inequality, which we believe in, but just BEE has not worked, and so anybody that accuses the DA of transformation is just trying to skirt over their own problems and the problems that beset the country without actually analyzing what the DA has been saying in our policy documents for many years.
And now, one of the strongest opponents of BEE is Professor William Gumede. Now, according to him, about R1 trillion has been transferred from white and institutional shareholders to maybe just 100 really very rich black people. Is that possible?
Well, it's a staggering statistic, if it's true. And I can't say whether it is or isn't, but it wouldn't be surprising, because if you look at how BEE started in the mid-90s, it was really a way of big companies carrying favor with the ANC and committing their own transformation agenda through the transfer of shares. And one of the problems that has resulted from that is that the beneficiaries haven't really started and grown businesses. They've just had large amounts of shares sort of dumped in their lap. And of course, one of those prominent people is President Ramaphosa himself. So as a consequence, it has meant that BEE has been abused. And if you go into any township, I mean, I work in Soweto, it's my constituency, you'll see that hardly anybody there who is in need of so-called transformation and a leg up has got it as a result of BEE legislation. So we've got to completely rethink it. And, you know, I'd like to see the stats that Professor Gumede has used for their calculation, but it is a shocking number if it's true.
Meanwhile, what is the alternative, Toby?
So in the DA's economic justice policy, we have come up with a plan which we think is more in tune with world trends. And it's not to say that companies don't have a social obligation. They do. So what we're saying is that the sustainable development goals, the 17 SDUs, SDGs are the way to go. In other words, a company can choose one or other of those, whether it be reducing poverty or improving educational outcomes or supporting small business. And then they can build their redress policies around that. They can choose what they want to do and how much they want to spend, but also they can choose the ways in which those outcomes are measured. And I think the policy is something which would also be attractive to multinational companies. As you know, there's a big question mark today over Starlink and other potential investors in our telecommunications infrastructure, where the legislation states that they have to hand over 30% of their business to black-owned shareholders. And that is a disincentive. The same is happening in the mining industry. You know, the recent mining legislation tabled by Minister Mantashi is having the same chilling effect on investment. So if you look at the SDGs, which are generally accepted by all companies, South African or otherwise, we think that would be something that companies would understand and be able to buy into. But, you know, again, it goes back to the point. These have to be supplementary to the fundamental need to grow the economy. That has to be number one. And, I mean, we saw yesterday that the stats saying that the economy only grew by 0.1% in the last quarter, which is a shocker. So that's got to be our focus. In the GNU, that's the DA's focus 100%. And any policy that does not result on evidence-based likelihood of growing the economy and creating jobs should be abandoned or scrapped. That's the strong view. And we're taking it into every portfolio that we belong to. Certainly in trade and industry, we're making those points very, very clear.
Thank you. That was Toby Chance of the Democratic Alliance speaking to BizNews about corruption and empowerment. And I'm Chris Stain for BizNews.
Thank you, Chris.